Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 403, entitled Feeling Insecure with Tim Nash, episode 2, Risks and Regulations. It was published on Thursday, the 19th of December, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and a few bits of housekeeping just before we begin the podcast and get onto the chat with Tim. The first thing to say is that we are having a bit of a holiday at WP Builds. Hopefully, if that's your thing, you are as well. We're going to take 2 weeks off. We call that a fortnight in the UK. It's 2 weeks off, which means that we're going to be having the next episode of the podcast on the 9th of January. That's Thursday, the 9th of January. The This Week in WordPress show is also taking a bit of a hiatus just because of the holiday, and that will also be back in January as well. Keep your eyes on the WP Builds Blue Sky account, Mastodon. You could also keep an eye on our YouTube account and possibly our X account as well. You can find all of the details about that over at our page, wpbuilds.com/subscribe. Something else to mention is that we still have a Black Friday page. There is a dwindling but still present number of deals. You never know, you might find just the thing that you're after. wpbuilds.com/black to find out more. And the last thing to mention before the podcast is wpbuilds.com/advertise. If you have a product or service in the WordPress space and would like to get it in front of a WordPress-specific audience, we definitely have that. As voted in a recent award ceremony, we came out as the number one podcast in the WordPress space, and I'd like to thank everybody who voted for us. Really deeply appreciated. Once more, wpbuilds.com/advertise if you would like to have your product or service in front of that audience. A bit like these three fine companies. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also helped out by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also helped this week by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that's Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And deep, sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds podcast. If you happen to come across their products or services, please mention WP Builds when you interact or purchase. It really would help support the WP Builds podcast. Right, what have we got for you today? Well, it is episode 2 in the new security series that I'm doing with Tim Nash. You may be paying attention enough to notice that I'm also doing shows with Courtney Robertson. I'm doing them with Ray Moray. Obviously, this one with Tim Nash, but I'm also doing them in the optimization space with Remke Stavris, and there's another one planned in the very near future as well. But what do we get into today? Well, episode 2, we've entitled Risks and Regulations, and we're going to be exploring the security risks tied to the WordPress plugin ecosystem, highlighting instances where compromised plugins distributed malware to users. That's not good. We get into the new UK Cybersecurity and Resilience Bill, which mandates UK developers and those targeting EU-UK markets to comply with stringent cybersecurity measures, including vulnerability testing and reporting. There's also a bit of a foray into some practical actions that you can take, like installing two-factor authentication and maintaining antivirus software. And we also get into some real-world security examples discussing attacks by a group known as, well, wait for it, the pithy MUT-1244. that's not easy to say, who installed malware through phishing and fake exploits to steal credentials for mining cryptocurrency. And Tim underscores the evolving security threats affecting WordPress users. We also discuss SSL adoption, catalyzed by plugins like Really Simple SSL, is quite an interesting story there, and the importance of communication about plugin changes in the WordPress ecosystem. Tim's expertise really shines through, including his advocacy for a balanced approach between security and usability. And this rounds off this pretty engaging conversation and informative chat. I hope that you enjoy it, and I hope that you have a happy holiday. I am joined on the podcast today by Tim Nash. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
We have we've spent quite a long time figuring out the tech, because it always transpires that whenever I get on a call with Tim, there's some kind of weird audio problem. You know, there's echoing or the headphones don't quite match up. So we're trying something new. Hopefully it's going to work, Tim.
Well, if it doesn't, then I'm just going to come around to yours next time.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you can drive around in just a short time. Tim lives not that far away from me. In English terms, he's like the other side of the country. But in, you know, if you're, for example, Canadian or American or Australian, he literally is next door.
Yeah, well, I live down the road.
Down the road, indeed. Tim joined us several months ago now because he is very kindly given up his time to educate you, the listener, all about the WordPress security landscape, the security landscape on the internet in general. And this is our second episode. You can listen to a previous one. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But this is going to be our second foray into that. So we're going to cover off exciting stories, if you like, things that Tim thinks over the last 3 months have been of interest in the security landscape. However, we have to do the bio, because in order to understand that you know what you're talking about, we have to know that you've got a heritage in this. I feel that security really does merit that. I think there's many, many areas where it probably wouldn't matter quite so much, but we need to know that you know what you're talking about. So just lay that out for us, Tim. Tell us about yourself.
So I'm Tim Nash. I'm a WordPress security consultant. I said that with a question mark because sometimes I'm like, am I? I do WordPress security. My background is very mixed, but I started off life as doing security and doing physical penetration testing. So that was like breaking into places, which was lots of fun. Then I got involved in this WordPress malarkey and did some bits for a while, ran a dev agency. And then I briefly retired, which was fantastic, until I got bored. And also ran out of money and discovered that retirement, you actually have to have money to do. You can't just...
Yeah.
So in fact, I feel I was probably would be called unemployed, but I was retired as far as I was concerned. I ended up working for a hosting company where I started life going, oh, I know all about security and particularly about WordPress security. And then I had to start looking after hundreds of thousands of websites and realized I knew very little about WordPress security and had to learn very quickly. I came out of that with a really good understanding of not just what is the best practice, but a lot about actually what you can do. Because it's all well and good when someone says, you should do this. But for most people, this is never going to be practical. This is normally take your computer, unplug your computer, dig a big hole and put your computer in it, then fill the hole in. And now your computer is wonderfully secure.
Never plug anything in ever again. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the most secure thing that you, in terms of computing, that you own. It's also in the hole, which is you filled in. So absolutely useless. So coming around to this idea of working in sort of pragmatic security. And so that's where I sort of try and emphasize pragmatism and let's just get you as good as possible, which means I talk an awful lot about risk and threat actors and what are your threats rather than necessarily what everybody's threats are. These days, I'm a security consultant. I work with primarily agencies, but I also work directly with clients, and big and small. But I actually really like working with smaller clients because in many ways, they're the ones I feel like I can help the most, because we're going from a place where, I don't want to say a lower level, but there is generally more I can help with the smaller clients.
I'm going to pick up on a couple of things. The first one is to say that go to Tim Nash's website. So it is the perfect URL, really. It's Tim Nash, Co.uk. So pause the podcast, go and check out what he's got on offer there. The second thing that I wanted to add to that is that it's always occurred to me, and I'm sure I probably heard it somewhere because I'm not as bright as the person that said it, no doubt, was that the more secure you are, the more inconvenient it is. So essentially, if you want something to be secure, it's probably not going to be as easy for you as the end user. So it's kind of interesting that you mentioned there that you're addressing that balance within your own business, and you've kind of worked out that there's a pragmatic line to take where you juggle that seesaw, if you like. On the one hand, security, on the other hand, convenience. And it sounds like the pragmatic approach is to try and get a happy medium between the two so that it's secure, but usable.
Usability is the key, and it's so often UX and usability, and to a certain extent accessibility, clash a little bit with security, but they also have a lot in common. And often, while we might clash on some of the technical aspects, we very rarely clash on like the wider philosophies. So if you were to talk to an accessibility expert, if you were to talk to a developer about accessibility, and they'll be talking about ARIA elements, and they'll be talking about X, Y, and Z. But if you talk to an accessibility expert themselves, they're more likely to be talking about things like keeping things really simple, keeping the structure easy to manage, doing all the... And when you talk to a security a developer, they might be going, I need to put in this sanitization rules, I need to be doing this. When you come and talk to a security consultant, they're going to be talking about, we need to keep this as simple as possible. We need to make sure that the threat surface, so what a bad actor can get to on your website, i.e. what forms are on the front end of your website, we want to make them as reduce that as much as possible. We want to keep things nice and simple. So we do share a lot of grounds, while at the same time having differing opinions on things. I would love to say that security was always simple and always a seamless experience, but it can't always be. But we can make it as much as possible.
I suppose a good thing from your point of view, and I do literally mean from your point of view, is the fact that the landscape is constantly moving. Does I suppose it provides a certain job stability, for want of a better word. And I know that that's weird. It sort of sounds like, you know, the more chaos there is in the security world, the more employment you've got. But in a sense, that is the case, isn't it? You know, and if you were to think about WordPress websites, unless that software changed and unless the prerequisites for a website changed as time moved on, we'd all be out of a job. We'd have built the website back in 2003 and nobody would need it updating or modifying in any way. But the fact that the security landscape is changing all the time, presumably the bad actors are getting better and the people who are sort of chasing after them are trying to keep abreast of what they're doing, keeps you in work, which is kind of an interesting dichotomy. We're gonna touch on, I don't know, four or five different links today. I will say that if you don't parse the URL, head to wpbuilds.com, search for this episode, and I'll put all of the links in there, because basically all of the links that we're going to touch on today are too long to read out. So we'll just mention the name of the article and you can either Google it or go to our show notes and crack on from there. But we're going to start the summation of the last three or so months with an article by Bleeping Computer. Now, this may not be a website that many people are familiar with if they're just WordPressers, but is that URL, Beeping Computer, is that a stalwart of the security landscape? Is this somewhere where security people hang out?
No, I'm going to be a little bit mean to them and say not really. What they are, though, is a really good gateway to the security landscape.
Oh, nice.
So they often take what would have been fairly complex stories and make them a little bit more simpler and make them almost a little bit more sexier than they actually are. So they do suffer a little bit from super scary headlines when you go into the body, you're going, can't find the meat of this. But on the positive side, they really do make it quite easy for the layperson to access.
Oh, great. Okay, so it's human-readable versions of difficult-to-understand stories.
Yeah.
That feels like the sweet spot, actually, for this podcast in a way, because our intention here, and certainly I wouldn't understand it if you began speaking like that, but if you start throwing out all the acronyms and start describing everything in all of the detail that you could bring to bear, I would quickly lose track of it, and therefore I would lose interest. So things like this are great. Bleepingcomputer.com. So this one is called, and again, you said they make sort of scary things out of something not so scary. Let's see how this one lands. 390,000 WordPress accounts stolen from hackers in supply chain attack. Okay, the sky's falling in, Tim. Tell us what's going on.
So, while I was researching, I came across a comment on Reddit from a Reddit user who went, oh my God, that must be like 10% of all WordPress accounts must be compromised. It's like, So I feel that perhaps people don't truly understand the scale of how big WordPress is. Yeah. But 390,000 WordPress credentials is, that's a lot of accounts. So a credential in this instance is a username and password.
Okay, so it's one user. So it could be 20 on one site, 3,000 on another, and so on, right?
Yeah. And okay. Also, at no point does the article ever mention the word administrator.
Oh, okay,
so this
okay.
Could in fact be 390,000 of the same user, which was a spam bot that got added onto a website.
Right, okay. Okay, well, you're already calming me down. You're walking me off the precipice already. This is great.
And this is a worthwhile exercise whenever you're reading these sort of security things, is to first ask yourself, well, what aren't they saying? And really, when people are talking about WordPress credentials, it is bad if a WordPress credentials get leaked. But we're really only interested in if they are administrators and the credentials were active, i.e. that you could actually log in. A big dump, so a dump is like where you get a CSV file and they literally have lots of content in there. It's a dump of that content. So if there was 390,000 WordPress login credentials, if you were to go through and process those, if only 20% of that was still active, and if of that lot, there might only be like 5, 10% that are actually administrators. We're still talking 50 to 100,000 credentials potentially.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But the taxonomy has shrunk down. Why this story was interesting to me was how they got the credentials.
This is always the interesting bit. This is the narrative bit, isn't it? The bit that you can turn into a story and make it fun.
Yeah, and in this particular case, the group that was stolen the credentials is a fairly well-known group. If you Google their name, which is MUT-1244, they turn up in stories often all over the place. Okay. They also have terrible names. I don't understand
why. It's very pithy. Easy to remember that.
Yeah. They have done a couple of other exploits over the time, but they've got this WordPress credentials, and they got it through malware. So they basically added got Trojan malware onto people's Windows machines. So Windows users came along, and a Trojan is where it's taking data and transmitting it back. So often when we think of Trojans, we think of them as keystrokes.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, it's collecting keystrokes and sending it across. But it could be collecting any data. And in this case, it's collecting when the person went to the WordPress website, they went, oh, I'm going to go and type in, blah, 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 so my login, blah, 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 my password, hit go.
Got it.
This is scary because obviously they've deliberately targeted WordPress in this because they needed to get so they know that somebody went to the WordPress site, to a WordPress website, and they know they put in a username and password. I mean, it also implies that this is an actual active user. So earlier where I was saying, well, of this 390,000, how many of these might be a spam account? Well, because of the way that the malware was used, we're pretty convinced a human being logged in.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're an administrator. It just means that they logged into a site.
Right.
Now, I know from my own anecdotal experience, as much as I would like to downplay this as much as possible, most people who log into WordPress sites, unless they're logging in for something like WooCommerce or as a third party, if you're a primary user of the website, so by that I mean someone who has to edit content and add content or do anything on the website itself, sadly, people do not understand user roles, and they probably are an administrator because that seems to be like the default that everybody puts themselves in. So you're going to take something away from this story. Don't have all your users as administrators. I think this is something we covered like last episode, and we'll cover every episode. At some point, we're going to say, that's bad. Just make your users be like editors and things. But in this scenario, we've got the WordPress credentials have been stolen, and this group has decided to release them. Why this is interesting, apart from the malware side on its own, this being treasure, they've got credentials. And normally when you hear about these things, you hear like things like where you've got session hijacking, which is where instead of them grabbing the username and password and putting it through, they get a session ID, which basically gives them temporary access. So they basically get, when you've logged into your website and said, I want to log in, and you've ticked the button underneath that says, remember me. Well, that's put a session on you. Even if you didn't tick remember me, there's a session that's been applied. And if you come up, go off the website and come back, it remembers you and it logs you in. Now, that session is normally stored on your in your browser in a cookie. And the bad actors come along and they grab the cookie and they go, oh, well, I'll have that cookie and I will log in as that user. So we're seeing more and more of those style attacks. But this, they actually have the username and password. And why that's useful to them is it's much easier to sell that.
Because a session,
you can only, you have to act on it. So you normally use a session, if you're going to steal sessions, you're going to want to use them really quickly. So you're going to want to put your back door on. And you might sell the back door, but if you have the logging credentials, you can sell those. And so it's much easier to make a quick buck out of them.
Can I just quickly interrupt and ask, what was the mechanism for, and I want to use the word exfiltrated, and I don't know if that's the correct way of saying it. What was the mechanism for acquiring at the WP login screen? How did that bit take place? Was this something in the browser, or was it malware on the Mac or the OS level, or what?
Yeah, so it was malware at the OS level. So somebody had installed malware because be this for a phishing attack, be this through them going to a dodgy website where it got downloaded, be it through an ad network that's been compromised, be it through another WordPress site that's been compromised and is serving malware. But the malware got installed on the computer. Now, what particularly drew me to this story is the same group has been responsible for other malware, and they've been identified as the technique for how they got that malware was that they basically pretended to be security researchers. And they said, oh, no, we discovered these horrible vulnerabilities, and here is the proof of concept. So a proof of concept is where you go, I'm going to show you how you can see this vulnerability and abuse it so that you can like go, I found this problem. Here is the proof that I found this problem. Now, these proof of concepts didn't work. What they did do was that when you went to execute the proof of concept to test it, it put malware on your computer.
I mean, there's a special place in hell for these people, isn't there? I mean, I know on the one hand, it's quite ingenious, isn't it? You can imagine in a James Bond film, they are the villain in that big chair that swivels around and they're stroking their cat. This is, I mean, that is quite the leap, isn't it? You know, you go online, you're trying to fix a problem, you're trying to ostensibly prevent malware, all the while you're actually enabling it. That is something. Gosh.
This occurs more often than not. And there was another story that I didn't link to, but came up in the same sort of time where this was around, of a well-known supplier of backdoors and ways into hack sites themselves got hacked because they downloaded a cheat to stop an anti-cheat device in the computer game.
And it's so many levels.
Was malware and compromised their computer. And that compromised computer was then caught up in a dragnet by law enforcement who caught him.
Oh, my word. There's so many levels to this. Can I just ask something else that's just occurred to me? It feels like this this gang, for want of a better word, and you use MUT-1244, the perpetrators of this. I'm guessing that WordPress wasn't the only thing that got installed as the target of this malware. Did it come, like, I don't know, looking for other things as well? One of the things happens to be the WordPress login screen, but also it was, I don't know, other CMSs, other accounts, like maybe they're after your Amazon credentials or something like that as well.
Pretty much exactly that. Given that we know that this, the way that they targeted quite a lot of this was via things like the proof of concept, they were looking for technical users. And because technical users often have the keys to the castles, and so they were looking for those credentials. They were looking for SSH keys. So that's a way for developers to communicate backwards and forwards with a server. They were looking at AWS credentials and other hosting environments. They were looking in specific directories. They were looking for GitHub credentials to be able to log into GitHub so that they could then utilize the developer's own credentials to put more malware in more places for it. And after all of this, you're thinking, well, surely they've got some horrible, malicious, really terrible plan. No, they've done all this and then they basically mine Bitcoin.
Oh my goodness. So
it's
all
not
of this
Bitcoin,
is to...
they're actually using Monero, but it's effectively they are using
some kind of cryptocurrency. Yeah, so once they've got these credentials, they're using it to install things whereby they can, you know, process CPU cycles or whatever, you know, GPU cycles in order to mine cryptocurrency. Honestly, it's always the money, isn't it? It always comes down to the money.
To print their money. And the type of the Monero crypto miner that they're doing, it can be done on the CPU. It can also be done in browser. So they can then infect customers who come to the website. They can then load some JavaScript on the front end, get there and put that into web storage. So your browser lets websites store data in web storage, and it even allows service workers to do processing in your browser. This is how we're having this call. The platform we're using is making use of exactly the same technology.
Maybe we too are contributing to the Monero account of the black.
Possibly. If you find sites are really slow and you're struggling to identify it, then you will find that you know there is a potential. If you're bin hacked and you're finding the site is slow and you can't see it in the CPU usage, it could be well that they've loaded extra JavaScript, which is now basically mining whenever someone comes to your site and goes, "Yeah, I'm going to grab some."
Gosh. So in the case of WordPress in this attack, a couple of questions. Firstly, is the intention then primarily, again, this attack in particular, this is so that they can deploy these crypto mining instances, let's call it that, so that the end users, the people that are consuming the website, and obviously, if you get the White House website, or you get TechCrunch or whatever, with millions of users per day, there's a big target there. So firstly, is that the case? Is that why WordPress is in this? Is so that they can capture the CPU cycles of browsers who are reading the content on those websites?
So in this particular case, it looks like that was at least part of the plan. The thing is that these are nearly always multifaceted. Once you have access, it's very rare, actually, for the person who gained access to then immediately abuse it. They normally put in another backdoor so they can maintain persistence, i.e. keep access. So they put in these backdoors. They'll normally then wait to see if they've been spotted for a little while.
Yeah.
And at that stage, really, they've got a choice of whether, if they're going to make a quick buck, they'll just sell the access. So they'll put you in a big data dump and then they'll sell it on. Or they might abuse it. In this case, they were abusing it with crypto mining, but there isn't any evidence that they did anything else in terms for themselves. But there is evidence that they then shared these credentials onwards, and that other bad actors had access and they could do whatever they liked with it, whether that was sending out vast amounts of emails, improving Viagra usage across the world, or whether that was that they were using them for DDoS attacks. All of a sudden, sites would find themselves that were hacked and compromised, and they'll be compromised in multiple ways because there were multiple bad actors who had been given access. But yeah, first of all, they'll have probably have just abused it with crypto.
Because, I guess the minor silver lining here is that in this case, we're not, well, I could be wrong, but I'm reading that we're not actually dealing with a WordPress vulnerability. This is a vulnerability in iOS, which is just consuming, you know, you're the unfortunate person who happens to visit the WordPress login screen, but it could be the Google login screen, it could be the Amazon login screen, anything you like, and it would be able to scrape that data. It's just that because on the flip side, WordPress is as a publishing platform will enable this Monero mining to be done in many, many, many instances. In this case, WordPress is more valuable than Amazon would be because, well, obviously Amazon's got credit cards attached to it, so ignore that. But you know, if you could access, something that had no credit cards, but was just you would log into it, something like Slack, say, for example. Because the publishing nature of WordPress will allow you to consume resources of multiple readers of those WordPress website pages. Yeah, so no threat here for WordPress. You don't need to worry about that WordPress core team.
Yes, but it is a good reminder that your own security of your devices, be that your phone, be it your laptop, these things can ultimately compromise down the line. I did a tongue-in-cheek story earlier in the year, which I published on YouTube, about when memes go bad, which was basically this story about a guy who just found a meme generator that was a browser extension and installed it, and then things went catastrophically wrong for him, but also for his hosting company, which ultimately ended up with ransomware.
I remember this. Yeah.
And so this story developed, and there was some artistic license, but everything in it had happened at one point or another. This daisy chain happens. So before we even talk about securing a website, we need to talk about securing the people who are using the website.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no point securing a website if Joe is just going to have some malware installed on his browser and can take complete control of it anyway.
I'll link to that in the show notes, but go onto Tim's website and search for When Memes Go Bad. I've got to say, Tim put an extraordinary amount of effort into that video.
There's only one.
bravo for that. Yeah, you suddenly realize the magnitude of actually doing YouTube. What was the solution for this one? 2FA? Would 2FA have just obliterated this?
Yeah. In this particular scenario, if you were compromised, then 2FA would have worked. 2FA would not have protected you if you were the developer and you had AWS credentials sitting in your local folders or your SSH keys. So, I mean, the real answer is don't get malware, which is really
easy to say.
Get malware.
Yeah. Just don't ever click on it. Go and bury that computer in the garden right now, and you'll be fine.
Continually running. You'd be surprised how many developers in particular do not think that they need antivirus and malware detection on their machines. And they'll argue the reason they don't need to do that is because they know better and they don't click dodgy links in emails. So we've trained a whole generation of people that like malware comes from phishing scams, just don't click links in emails, which is great, don't do that. But then they'll quite happily go and download something and just randomly click it.
Yeah, that's
right. If you're opening an application and you do not legitimately know the source and you know it absolutely 100%, even then you're not checked something, then there is a potential risk. So why not run antivirus software?
So that was a fabulous story. So again, we'll link to that. That came out very recently, just a few days ago, on Bleeping Computer. Now you linked to another story, and I don't know if we want to go to that one next. But you said that one story led in your mind to another. But I'll just read out the title. Do you want to go there?
We accidentally covered the second story, which is the GitHub repost. A lot of these people got the malware was through this GitHub website repository takeover. So basically, the bad actors managed to gain access to GitHub repositories and said, hey, we found some malware and here is proof of how you fix here's proof of how you can see if your site's going to be compromised or your software is going to be compromised by this piece of malware. And when you install the proof of concept, when you install the thing that would show you how whether your site or your software was vulnerable, you were in fact installing malware that put you through. So the second article is basically listing and showing how this happened. And it's not just this one group. This is lots of them. And look at it, it's a full examination of all the repositories, what the malware was in there, what the malware was trying to do. And it was from this initial research that they then found the 390,000 WordPress accounts listings. So it came from this original look where some researchers were going, yeah, that's very smart, but we can now reverse engineer everything from this to work our way backwards to find this second source.
So that one was called Thousands of GitHub Repositories Deliver Fake POC Exploits with Malware. And that was much longer ago. So that was a couple of years ago, October 22. But I will put both of those into the show notes. So maybe read them in the order that Tim presented them, the 390,000 one first and then this GitHub one second. And then also, like I said in the show notes, when memes go bad, Tim's piece. That then leads us to the fourth, I suppose, thing that we're going to cover today. Maybe this is the second to last one, the penultimate one. And this is over on we're familiar with this one. This is in the WordPress space very definitively. This is WordFence. 400,000. It's got two commas. It's 4 million. 4 million WordPress sites using really simple security free and pro versions, so they're plugins, affected by critical authentication bypass vulnerability. Anything starting with the number 4 million, Tim, is kind of freaky.
So you remember how the last one, we were like 390,000, that's not very many. Yeah. And remember, that's not sites, that was users. So I think this sort of bumps up the scale.
Yeah, so this is sites, right? 4 million sites.
4 million sites.
Oh, gosh.
It's 4 million sites running a plugin called Really Simple Security. The thing is, quite a lot of people listening might have had this software installed and not recognize the name. Oh. Whether it's good timing or bad timing, relatively recently, they had gone through a name change because they were expanding their offering. So they were originally the plugin that most of the 4 million people installed was a plugin called Really Simple SSL.
Oh, so tantalizingly close. You get the first couple of words and then it changes, right?
Yeah. So and most people will have installed this many, many years ago.
Oh, like so, in the late 90s when it was all about the, was it even the late 90s? It feels like 2015 or something.
Yeah, I was SSLs late 90s, were. You were yeah, just getting yeah, so,
just in the I don't way. Know why you I said 90s. Really,
yeah.
When SSL was becoming all the rage and things like Let's Encrypt were suddenly making it plausible for any website to have an SSL certificate. And so Google then pushed the ante a little bit, didn't they? And Chrome started saying SSL was the de facto. And I remember this plugin, Really Simple SSL. It was kind of like the one-click solution to take your site from non-SSL to SSL in one hit.
Yeah, I mean, back then, the default standard was HTTP. So if you went to a website, you typed in www.timnash, it would take you to the HTTP version. It required a lot of effort, a lot of technical understanding to get you to automatically go to HTTPS. Now, in reality, even back then, the hosting companies could have made this easy and done it in one click. It really is very simple for web servers to do this. But for a long time, hosts didn't default to HTTPS. They offered both HTTP and HTTPS. And it left it to the browser or the software to decide where it wanted to go. So a really simple SSL, basically, whenever you arrived on the HTTP version of the WordPress site, went, no, all the assets are over here, redirect. And it put the redirect in and it did these bits. Now, great. You never really, really needed it. If you understood what you were doing, it was absolutely an unnecessary plugin. But for a lot of people, it just made that migration from HTTP to HTTPS simple. Did it? Good name, really. Really simple for SSL, because it really was. Install, job done. But obviously, over time, while this plugin has been left on people's sites and sort of lingered, the use case and the growth for that plugin has dropped off. So the developers, to be fair, probably wanted to get more out of this, started adding extra features, and really were trying to compete with people like WordFence, people like CacheStack, people like SolidWP, and coming up with this sort of like big suite of security things. And in doing so, put in a horrible vulnerability into their software, which is unfortunate. The actual vulnerability, I think, is sort of almost irrelevant to this, because it was more to do with the fact that while it was super, super scary, the scarier thing was that people would see the super, super scary vulnerability and go, oh, that must be terrible for those people, and not realize that sitting on their site was that plugin, because it had a completely different name and wasn't the thing that they actually originally installed.
Do you think then that is there a conversation to be had in the WordPress space about a couple of things? First one, change of ownership of a plugin. So let's say we've got Brian over here and he's the developer, but Brian gets fed up of it and he decides he's going to sell the plugin on, and Susan takes it over. And Susan now runs with it. And nobody needs to know about that, except they do, because it turns out that Susan is up to no good. So that's the first one. Do we need to know when plugins change hands? But in this case, do we need to know when plugins change really what they do? So this really simple SSL, which did this one basic thing, suddenly decides to pivot and become something else. So it's changed its purpose. It's changed its name. And like you said, most people won't care. They'll just do the updates. And so long as it's on the most updated version, I don't care. I remember at some point I must have installed it, so it's fine. Do we need to have that conversation? The answer is, I think, yes. But how on earth do we begin that? I don't know.
The answer is yes. And how on earth do we begin that?
Yeah, I'm glad that you I'm glad that you concur.
Really difficult. We still don't have a mechanism in the WordPress.org repository to let you know if something has been deleted. So let's say I've stopped I've decided I'm discontinuing my plugin and I've archived it. Well, you can now at least go on to WordPress.org and you go to my plugin and go, oh, there's a little banner that comes up and says, this hasn't been updated for X number of releases. Or there's a banner that says, this has been archived. This plugin is no longer being supported. Now, if you go to your WordPress website, crickets. There's nothing there.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
I guess
isn't
as a
it?
First step, the information could be potentially fed to your WordPress website. The owners is another really good example. We've obviously had a case relatively recently where ownership was changed dramatically overnight. And one of the issues you had was for people who were doing automatic updates, it was like, surprise, this is now changed without any indication. And even if you were manually updating, there was no way for you to know until you hit the manual update that you were now getting a new version with a new name and a new people running it. So maybe there is a case for actually automatic updates and manual updates should have some sort of, hey, this is changed. Do you really want us to proceed? And then maybe we could put some threshold bars in there. But anything where we reduce that, where we put friction in and round up, people are going to stop doing them.
Yeah. But also,
imagine if I add a contributor and they've done all this amazing work to get us done. And then it goes to the updates and it comes up with a big warning saying, Nathan's been added as a contributor. And you're like, well, I don't know this Nathan fella. I'm not trusting him. So you don't update.
This is a good baseline position, by the way, Tim. This is healthy advice. Also, like, who would even monitor this stuff? So I can imagine that if you've got a Shopify app that the Shopify marketplace is fairly well administered by the Shopify staff. You know, I'm imagining that the code will be inspected by the Shopify staff, and I'm imagining they've got bodies on the ground to do that. And so if an update comes through, they've probably got the time to check that. I don't know how it works with the plugin review team. I know that at the beginning, upon first getting a plugin into the plugin repo, there's friction there. But we're quite proud at the moment of the fact that that friction has been minimized by automating things. But still, there's a body of work to be done to get it in. But I don't know if there's any work that's done after that. Like if I get in a basic, simple, really simple SSL plugin, and then I decide to change it overnight to really dark and sinister, nasty, I'm going to hack you plugin, is there any check and balance to see if that's happening? I don't know if there is.
I don't believe that there is currently. There are sort of manual periodic where you can where they can bring you back into the queue for review. So there is a mechanism in place, but whether or it's acted on very often, I don't know. But yeah, there's a really good example. Many years ago, as a joke, I wrote a plugin called Minimum Viable Plugin. And submitted it in.
Great.
And then I never expanded on that, and I killed it off before it was got too far along. But as a proof of concept to prove exactly this, that I could just put in a plugin that did literally nothing, passed all the guidelines, technically had to be approved, then I could go and change that into Tim's evil malware. And nothing could, there was no mechanism in place to stop me. And that's still the case, except now people would tell me off.
Yeah, but I also, I presume then at some point, you're relying on the community to, you know, somebody falls foul of it, reports it, it quickly blows up, the plugin review team get wind of it. And so they, you know, they, at that point, it's a more manual process. Hopefully the damage hasn't been done too widely and too extensively. Gosh. But, you know, in the case of
talking about WordPress.org, not the wider ecosystem.
Right.
Imagine the scenario where you've paid for this. And you pay for it.
Yeah, there's no checks and balances. All bets are off, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're just downloading a zip file or, you know, something equivalent and uploading that. And there's no checks or balances in the repo. It'd be interesting as well if, and I don't know if this has happened, maybe it has. Maybe somebody has, I'm going to say like man in the middle or something like that on an already very popular plugin. And been able to turn it into some horrible malware. And just because the user base was already so big, been able to leverage that for the small period of time that it went undetected. I don't know if that's happened in the past or not.
We had that happen with WordPress plugins where a WordPress plugin has been compromised and content has been pushed in. We've had it where WordPress plugins have been sold and then they've been reabused. But probably a wider examples of this is inside the sort of the underlying operating system, particularly for Linux, is filled with libraries and sub-libraries. And we've got some really good examples of where libraries have been compromised, taken completely over, and then the been used to either exfil data or put malware on. And again, you outside of our community, but if you're looking towards the JavaScript community, you have NPM, which is its own humongous mess. And there are many scenarios of malware being snuck in there or just a library being removed and destroying the ecosystem. All of our package management, whether it's a plugin, whether it's NPM, whether it's Composer, all of these have ultimately rely on the trust of developers being nice. And again, we're back to the same thing we were about at the start.
Yeah.
If the developer gets compromised, we're screwed.
Yeah. So, it's this is an interesting story then. So these 4 million websites, that wasn't really what we were talking about. It was more the fact that this plugin was a thing and then it became another thing, which may have just let people's guards down a little bit. You know, there it is. I installed it in the past. I must have meant to install it. And so this feature extension, I suppose, of what it was going to do kind of was the story there. So, again, I'll post the link to that in the show notes. I've got one more article. I don't know if that's where you want to round it off, but let's go to this one. This is on Tim's website itself. So he wrote an article. You're going to have to forgive the British colloquialisms here. What the heck? What the heck is the UK cyber security? I'm going to read it in thick Yorkshire. Here we go. What the heck is the UK cyber security and resilience bill? That was more Lancastrian, I think, than it was Yorkshire. Sorry. What the heck is the UK's security, cyber and resilience bill?
I know. Isn't it exciting? You can't try coming up with a more interesting title than that. So last time I was on, we briefly covered the EU Cyber Resilience Act, which was when we were referencing to do with PatchStack and how they were developing their vulnerability disclosure program. And one of the reasons that they were promoting it was because basically it would allow you to comply with the European Cyber Resilience Act. Well, at the time, I know at least a couple of Brits who were like, well, we don't belong in the EU anymore. It doesn't affect us. Now, A, they were wrong, because if you're doing any interaction with anybody in the EU, then that bill sort of affected you. But also, the good news, in the King's speech, because we have like antiquated ways, the King basically sits on a big throne and says, my government are going to do the following. And he read out, my government is going to create the UK Cybersecurity Resilience Bill.
And he didn't use a Lancastrian accent. Which will turn into an act of
parliament and become a law. and it's the same. So everything we talked about last time.
Is it literally verbatim? Is it more or less like copy-paste, or are there some significant changes?
So the bill itself has not been fully published yet. So we're lagging behind by about a couple of years. But the idea is to make sure that even if the language is tweaked, it matches in tone and in sort of what obligations are with EU, so that what's the word that you use when you've got two parties that you want to keep in sync? So anything that was in the EU Cyber Resilience Act is probably going to be in the UK Cyber Security Resilience Bill. And it also includes some interesting use cases around open source. And there is basically, if you are a developer of plugins, a developer of themes, or you build websites, or you do website maintenance for people, there is a reasonable chance you are going to be affected by this bill in the UK, and that you are going to find yourself obligated to do a bunch of stuff around risk assessment and risk management and long-term maintenance and support that you up until now have not been obligated to do, but you should have been doing anyway.
Right. So just to parse that quickly, so everything that you just said in the last minute refers to residents of the UK doing work online, so building websites. You weren't talking about, let's say, for example, French people building websites that are in every way connected with France, but also sell into the UK, or were you?
So anybody who is interacting with the UK, or anybody who is interacting with the EU, if you have a customer, and this is based around mainly corporate stuff, so if you have a customer that is EU-based or a customer that is UK-based, you will be affected by this. If you are in the UK and going outwards, you'll be affected as well.
Okay, great. That makes sense. What are the top line things then that in ways that people, I guess, would necessarily expect or would expect? I'm scrolling to the bottom. You've got a heading called Practically, What Does This Mean? I don't know if that's where you'd end up in order to sort of sum it up, but what are the takeaway items, the hot takes?
So the big things are, you have to demonstrate that you are now paying attention to cybersecurity.
Okay.
Sounds very broad. But basically,
you can copy and paste that you listen to this podcast. That's enough.
Not really, because you do have to create a formal risk assessment. And if you're building code, you are meant to be doing vulnerability testing of some sort. So you need to hire somebody, or you need to internally have the framework and the tool set to test your code and do security assessments. That's like the first one.
Tim. I happen to know a chap who does that kind of work. Comes on this podcast once in a while. I'll link to his website in the show notes. Right, carry on.
The second thing you need to do, if you are selling plugins, themes, or code, if you sell code, you need to have a way that people can report vulnerabilities. Now, this is where Patchstack had their vulnerability disclosure program we were talking about last month. But it doesn't need to be that complicated. It really could be, here's an email address, it goes into our support ticket system, as long as you act on them. And the thing that probably will be different from the UK version to the EU version is, at the moment, the EU version says that you have to report vulnerabilities to the European central body. You're probably going to have to report security vulnerabilities to the UK equivalent. And by reporting them, you as the vendor, as the person who develops the software, it's referred to as the, I've forgotten the words they use. They use funny language.
I can see the word vendor.
The person who's been the vendor who's doing the work. You have a responsibility to address vulnerabilities quickly, notify relevant parties within a very short time frame. They are referring to that in hours, not days, weeks, or months.
Okay.
And maintain a distinct and accessible security support process. So basically, you can't just say security issues go to our normal ticketing system. You have to show that you've got a dedicated route for security vulnerabilities going through.
Okay, so this feels like your company has to have an SOP for this. You really can't wait for it to happen. You have to be proactive, and you know, it doesn't have to be the most complicated system in the world, as you've just described. But you can't be Googling this in a year's time when something goes wrong. You probably need to be Googling it when this episode finishes, so that you know the lay of the land and you've got the bits and pieces set up. Okay, wow.
We'll stick with that. There are other aspects that are related to stuff if you are specifically a plugin vendor, but go read the article. Let's not spoil it for everyone.
Yeah. So that one, as I said, what the EC without the H is the UK's Cybersecurity and Resilience Bill, obviously written by Tim on his website. And again, links in the show notes, but you can probably Google that as well, I would have thought. That's everything that you've put in our little shared Google Doc, which was nice. Thank you for doing that. But was there anything else that you wanted to touch on anecdotally just before we end, or are you happy?
I think the takeaway from this episode... originally, I planned the takeaway from this episode to be install two-factor authentication, which I still think is really important and should be it's a good takeaway from any episode we do, I think, should be install two-factor authentication. Much like, you know, not everybody should be administrators. But maybe, actually, the takeaway from this episode should be, when was the last time your antivirus software ran?
Okay.
When did you last check if it was updating regularly? Because... antivirus software needs to have regular updates because there are more threats coming all the time. So not only do you need to have your antivirus software running, it needs to be up to date. So maybe as you're listening to us and you're about to put on the next podcast, you think, I'm just going to run the antivirus software in the background. And obviously your computer is now churning, so you've got nothing else better to do. You can make a cup of tea and listen to the next episode of Don't Feed Builds.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Love it. Nice segue. We're going to record the next episode in hopefully sort of towards the middle, maybe the latter end of March. So no doubt, I'm sure there'll be plenty of bits and pieces that take place between now and then. But that was lovely. Summing up the last 3 months of interesting stories going around in the security world, not just WordPress, but the wider security world as well. One final plug. Where can we find you, Tim? What's the social network that you hang out on most? That kind of thing.
So these days you can nearly always find me on LinkedIn. I know it's very businessy, but if you're looking for me, that's a good place to find me. That's at linkedin.com/in/tnash. But you can find me on all the other socials in various places. I've just joined Blue Sky because I am a trailblazer and I don't in any, you know, I always get there ahead of everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all there. Any other, well, I'll tell you what, I'll link to the LinkedIn and then people can take it from there. So once again, thank you so much for giving us your wisdom, Tim Nash. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that. An absolute pleasure chatting to Tim. If you have anything that you would like to say about that, please do it on our website. Go to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 403. And leave us a comment there. We would really appreciate it. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also helped out by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also helped this week by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And deep, sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that's all we've got time for this week. Just a reminder, wpbuilds.com/black for those straggling Black Friday deals. We're going to be having a couple of weeks off, and also wpbuilds.com/advertise if you would like to get your product or service in front of a WordPress-specific crowd. Okay, I'm going to fade in some cheesy music and say, stay safe, have a good holiday. Bye-bye for now.